to using ICANN's Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. There are significant differences between trademark law and the UDRP. Some of them are based on the differences between the Internet and the real world. Domain names were originally for the sole purpose of functioning as an address, like a street name. With the globalization and commercialization of the Internet, domain names have developed important significance as business identifiers. They are now highly visible in real space, showing up on television commercials, billboards, magazine ads, and even the size of buses. In these new guises, they sometimes conflict with trademarks and other traditional business identifiers. Two factors exacerbate this conflict. First, domain names are global, and they must be unique. A particular string of characters may only link to one location. Trademarks, however, may overlap in different industries or different geographical locations. Increasingly, though, cyberspace is being treated as a single market that cannot be subdivided into comparable regions. Secondly, it is common practice for many Internet users to guess at domain names. Thus, domain names based on intuition become valuable corporate assets. The more commonplace the name, the more valuable the asset. Trademark law, on the other hand, severely restricts protection for generic words. Disputes between trademark owners and domain name holders are exacerbated by these differences. How does the law compare to the UDRP? The principles of trademark and name rights are well established, and they benefit from a long history of judicial interpretation. The UDRP is new, its terms are not well defined, and their interpretation is not necessarily a matter of stare decisis. Trademark law allows many different merchants to use the same word on their goods or services as long as the consumer isn't likely to be confused as to the source or origin of the items. Confusion may not exist where there are different marketing territories, different types of products, or different label appearance. A domain name is less flexible. It crosses all geographic boundaries, regardless of the domain holder's intent to limit sales to local territory. It is text-based, and it has no other attributes, such as a logo design, that can help distinguish it. Trademark law is territorial. It differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. The UDRP, on the other hand, is intended for global application and does not specify which local law, if any, should be applied. Trademark law applies to commercial enterprise, whereas the bulk of Internet use is not for profit. Trademark rights are enforced by the majesty of government. The UDRP is enforced by contractual agreement. Trademark registration practices in many jurisdictions require complex searches to determine possible conflict. The ease of domain registration and website posting has permitted thousands of people to publish online worldwide. Few of them realize the need to consult trademark counsel before doing so. Conflicting opinions are being issued by UDRP panelists. But unlike judicial systems, there is no single court of final review that can resolve the differences among the UDRP resolution providers. The Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy was designed to provide a quick and relatively inexpensive procedure that could be used by mark owners around the world against those who register domain names in bad faith and without rights or legitimate interest. Trademark litigation, on the other hand, is a slow, expensive, deliberative process requiring rigorous standards of proof with its application limited to the local jurisdiction. Lastly, the elements of proof are quite different. Under the UDRP, five elements must be established. One, the complainant has trademark rights in the name. Two, the domain name is identical or confusingly similar to the mark. 3, that there was both registration and use of the domain name. 4, such registration and use was in bad faith. And 5, the registration and use were without rights or legitimate interest. Please listen to the sections on bad faith and rights and legitimate interest for further discussion of those terms. In trademark law, on the other hand, the most common elements are 1, the existence of senior trademark rights, 2, commercial use of the name, and 3, that the use is likely to confuse consumers as to the source or origin of the goods or services being offered by the infringer. Trademark may find either the use or the registration of a name to be infringing. The UDRP, on the other hand, requires proof of both. It is hoped that many of these problems will be resolved by the Internet community as experience with a new system reveals its shortcomings. One of the many benefits of the UDRP is the willingness of its administrator, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, called ICANN, to hold open fora where such complaints can be voiced and where voluntary working groups can be formed to advise on improvements. To understand the evolution of the UDRP, one needs a little background on the purpose and function of the Domain Name System, or DNS. The Domain Name System was designed in the 1980s to deal with the problem of Internet growth. Data flowing over the Internet that is intended for Jane User is actually addressed to a long number known as an IP address. These numbers must be unique so that the routers, the machines that forward Internet data from node to node, can properly target the destination. There are many kinds of records that can be mapped or correlated to an IP address, and IP addresses can change frequently, for example, when a user changes Internet access providers. Imagine the convenience of having the telephone number, fax, and mobile phone numbers of each individual listed in one location under that individual's name. In an electronic database, these numbers can be changed or added as needed, but the file name, that is, the user's personal name, remains constant so that you can always find all the records for that person. This is the reason that names were originally adopted for use on the Internet, and of course, they are also user-friendly and easy to remember. Each name must be a unique string of characters. Otherwise, duplicate addresses would disrupt Internet traffic. To transfer data to a particular name, a telephone book-like directory is required so that routers can look up the IP address currently assigned to that person's name. This list, in electronic form, has to be updated constantly as users change their IP addresses as new users come online. As the list of users got longer and longer, routing speed slowed down proportionally because it took a longer time to scan this entire list to find the correct IP address. Imagine having to reissue the white pages of the New York telephone book every time a new customer got a telephone. The technical solution to this problem was the domain name system. Instead of having a single white pages type list, a yellow pages approach was designed, breaking the content into categories called domains. Domains are simply lists of lists nested within each other. The URL for this distance learning course website, for example, is cyber.law.harvard.edu. Cyber appears on the list for the third level domain called .law. .law is on the list for the second level domain, .harvard, which is listed in the top level domain, .edu. Updates in the .law lists are made locally by the law school. Harvard University decides whether or not to add .med to the .Harvard list. And the .edu administrators determine who appears in that category that contains colleges and universities. Thus, the changes are made on a discrete level. The .edu list does not have to be changed just because Harvard decides to add a new department. And only the .harvard domain need be changed in that case. The routers only have to find the .harvard domain to direct traffic to someone within that institution. An additional router at the .harvard level will direct the traffic further inside the internal net. At the very top level, the list contains only 7 generic top-level domains called gTLDs and approximately 145 country code TLDs called ccTLDs. This very small database is known as the root. If one deleted the entry for .com, which is a gTLD, then all of the lower-level lists nested within that domain would disappear along with it. No one could reach a .com address unless she happened to know the specific IP address number. Authority over the root is at the heart of the domain name system. Understanding how the DNS works leads to the next question, which is, who runs the root? For most of the history of the Internet, online use was limited primarily to educational and research institutions. The domain name directory, that list of lists, was maintained by John Postel, an academic who worked under a research contract from the United States government. Dr. Postel operated through an entity known as the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, IANA. Its registration policy was first come, first served. There was no review of rights. As the workload of entering and deleting names became heavier, the contract to maintain the list was passed on to a private corporation, now known as Network Solutions, Inc., or NSI. NSI continued Dr. Postel's policy, but almost as soon as the net was open to commercial traffic in 1992, trademark disputes arose. The most egregious cases in these early days involved cyber squatting and cyber piracy. Cyber squatting generally involved an individual who registered domain names that were identical to well-known marks in an attempt to resell it to the mark owner at a significant profit. Cyber pirates are those who register the mark or a confusingly similar domain name in an attempt to lure traffic intended for the mark owner away to the pirate's website. In the absence of legislative definition, these terms are used interchangeably. Frequently unable to obtain service on remote infringers or to identify the actual domain holder due to false registration data, trademark owners brought contributory infringement actions directly against NSI for wrongfully granting domain registrations to those without rights to use the mark. Although NSI routinely avoided liability in these contests, it began revising the registration contract signed by domain holders in order to impose a domain dispute policy that reflected these liability issues. This dispute policy was revised with some frequency. By 1999, it had several characteristics that were found unsatisfactory by both domain holders and domain owners. In the first place, it could only be used by owners of federal or national marks. It ignored design marks, common law marks, state registrations, and foreign personal name rights. It could only be utilized against a domain name that was identical to the mark, unlike the broader standard used in trademark, where infringement can be found if the two names are similar. And it did not reflect principles of fair use, such as free speech and product criticism. The Clinton administration also recognized that the Internet had become such a broadly distributed network, with ownership of its constituent parts so widely scattered and subject to the laws of so many different jurisdictions that it was no longer appropriate for one single government to be coordinating its functions. So the United States government decided to withdraw from the role of technical coordinator and permit the private sector to assume this responsibility. There was also intense pressure to break up Network Solutions' monopoly position in the lucrative .com/.org/.net domain registration market. In November of 1998, Department of Commerce entered into a Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU, with a private corporation established by Dr. Postel and called the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. This MOU gave ICANN oversight responsibility for domain names, IP numbers, protocol parameters, and the root. ICANN has 2 years, which end in September 2000, to develop methods and procedures for technical coordination in a manner that will ensure bottom-up coordination, market competition, global representation, and stable operations on the Internet. Introducing competition in the registry and registrar business, however, means the possibility of conflicting domain dispute policies. So the Department of Commerce contract specifically required that ICANN make recommendations regarding trademark domain name policies and particularly review those proposed by the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, which concerned the development of a uniform approach to resolving trademark domain name disputes involving cyber piracy, that involved a process for protecting famous trademarks in the generic top-level domains, and which measured the effects of adding new GTLDs and related dispute resolution procedures on trademark and intellectual property holders. From this point on, ICANN's policy on domain disputes evolved fairly rapidly. The WIPO proposals, which had actually been circulating for several years, were formally presented to ICANN in May of 1999. They included the establishment of a uniform, mandatory domain name dispute policy for resolution of cyber squatting disputes, as well as a system of panels to arbitrate them. Many elements were adopted in a model agreement proposed for voluntary adoption by the half dozen newly accredited registrars and network solutions. The models were presented for public comment during the summer of 1999. This comment reported them to be unfairly burdensome on non-commercial and fair users, so the ICANN board insisted on the following amendments. A. In determining whether a domain name has been registered in bad faith, consideration should be given to the following factors in addition to the ones stated by WIPO. These factors are whether the domain name holder is making a legitimate, non-commercial, or fair use of the mark without intent to misleadingly divert consumers for commercial gain or to tarnish the mark. Two, whether the domain name holder, including individuals, businesses, and other organizations, is commonly known by the domain name, even if the holder has acquired no trademark or service mark rights. And three, whether in seeking payment for the transfer of a domain name, the domain name holder has limited such a request for payment to its out-of-pocket costs. In particular, there should be a general parity between the appeal rights of complainants and those of domain name holders. And lastly, the dispute policy should seek to define and minimize reverse domain name hijacking. The models were then subjected to redrafting by staff and a small number of domain name supporting organization activists. The resulting ICANN proposals, along with a staff report, were posted in September for 2 weeks of public comment. The final versions, known as the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, called the policy, and the rules for Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy, known as the rules, were accepted by ICANN at its annual meeting in Los Angeles in November. The UDRP became effective for all .com/.org/.net registrars by January 2000. See the ICANN website for a list of ICANN's historical and current policy documents. ICANN still has much work ahead in regard to trademark issues. In July of 2000, the board is expected to take action on the questions of famous marks, whether or not they should receive special registration protection, and also the addition of new generic top-level domains, whether these should be charted for special purposes, how they should be administered, and which names should be used. The corporate bylaws of ICANN and certain external agreements with the registry and registrars require that domain name policy decisions of this monumental level should be made through a bottom-up consensus process, going first to ICANN's domain name supporting organization for review and recommendation. The DNSO working groups are open to participation by the public. To follow the development of these issues, see the ICANN website, the consideration of new generic top-level domains, and scroll down to the links where you can subscribe to the mailing list. See the process of following section of this report for a complete review of the UDRP procedures. There are many limitations of the UDRP. There's no question that it provides a benefit to trademark owners and domain holders in foreign jurisdictions who need to assert their rights to domain names that have been registered in the U.S. They will no longer have to hire expensive foreign counsel to lead them through our legal system. Rights under their local laws have a better chance of being properly recognized if the presiding dispute panelist is from that same region. However, there are many unresolved issues in this new process that may cause some serious growing pains. One shortcoming is that the UDRP does not apply to approximately 150 ccTLDs, such as .UK and .NZ, although 80% of registrations are currently made in the applicable .com, .org, and .net domains. That may well change as Internet use increases in all parts of the globe, and cyber squatters are really likely to seek the ports that are safe from which they can launch their unfair practices. The UDRP is also limited in application to cyber squatting, as defined in Section 4 of the policy. Traditional trademark infringement actions looked at whether there was a likelihood of confusion in the minds of consumers as to the source or origin of particular goods or services. Under the UDRP, the standards are related to the domain holder's bad faith and the absence of rights or legitimate interests. Listen to the sections titled Bad Faith and Rights and Legitimate Interest for a discussion of these terms. The legislative history of the UDRP indicates a clear intent that this system not become a substitute for courts for resolving routine cases of trademark infringement. Nevertheless, cases are heard where even both of the parties are engaged in legitimate commercial enterprise. Early UDRP opinions indicate that the leeway granted to the dispute panelists to interpret both the language of the UDRP and the applicable law is leading to inconsistent conclusions, particularly where there is no guideline on choice of law. In the Saint-Gobain.net opinion, for example, there were contacts with France, the complainant, the U.S., the respondent, in Mexico, the host server, but the panelist does not specifically identify any locality as controlling. Listen to the section on choice of law later in this report. Those UDRP panelists who are familiar with trademark law may well apply it usefully, but those who are not may impose principles that are not normally associated with trademark rights. In one case, bad faith was presumed in the absence of any use of the domain name at all, simply because the presiding panelist could conceive of no legitimate use. This case happened to involve Australian parties and perhaps Australian law has limited recognition of fair uses. But in the U.S., product criticism and other rights could well lead to an opposite conclusion. There is then a real possibility that trademark rights will be expanded by these new definitions of bad faith, or because this policy was designed to be flexible enough to cover global utility, that rights from each of the jurisdictions around the world will end up being provided to every single trademark owner as a bundle of hyper rights available exclusively in cyberspace. Another difference with this UDRP policy is that there is no evidentiary review. The facts, such as the existence of a trademark registration, are simply alleged. They may be supported by attached exhibits, such as photocopies of trademark registration certificates or copies of web page results from online searches of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office trademark database, or copies of advertisements, product labels, or letterheads, for example. However, none of these documents is required to be authenticated. The role of the fact that opinions based on unauthenticated data are being published rather than being kept private, as most arbitration results are kept, may have an unexpectedly unfortunate impact. Panelists are already beginning to cite prior opinions as precedent. Here's a quote from the recent eRevolution.com case. Quote, although entitled to considered principles of law deemed applicable, the panel finds it unnecessary to do so in any depth. The jurisprudence, which is rapidly being developed by a wide variety of panelists worldwide under the ICANN policy, provides a fruitful source of precedent. Without access to the pleadings or careful pronouncement of the jurisdictional law being applied, this seems a dangerous process. Please listen to the section on precedent later in this report. In a court of law, the proof of claims is based on a rigorous set of standards, both as to admissibility and to relevance. This is not the case in the UDRP, which was intended to be fast and relatively inexpensive. The fact that these opinions are published and are being followed as precedent may be quite undermining of the stability of this process. A further disadvantage of the UDRP is that the procedure may only be initiated by trademark owners. There is no corresponding ability of the domain holder to bring the dispute before her preferred provider at her convenience. A respondent is disproportionately disadvantaged in selecting three-member panels. The complainant has already had its choice of the host provider, and thus the choice of the panel president. The complainant will also get to nominate three candidates for a second member of the three-member panel. The respondent may also recommend three candidates for the third panel position, but the respondent has no way of determining whether or not her nominees are either available or eligible to serve. If none of them can stand, then the choice defaults to the host provider. The host provider was selected in the first place by the complainant. To the extent that clear differences among providers emerge, if they do, then the gaming of these choices will proliferate. Another problem is that there sometimes is not enough comment in the opinions to determine the specific basis for a decision. The disputants are also prohibited by virtue of the complaint and registration contracts from suing any of the parties responsible for the dispute proceeding.